Hi, I'm Nancy Clare, and welcome to episode 17 of Speaking of Mysteries. This week's guest is Roger Hobbs, who wrote his first novel, Ghost Man, between his junior and senior years at Reed College in Oregon. It was published when he was 23 years old to critical acclaim, and it has also received nominations for numerous Best First Novel awards from mystery fiction organizations, including an Edgar and the upcoming Anthony Award. In scheduling this interview, we had to work around Roger's jury duty. He talks about it at the end of the interview, but the prediction that he wrote in an email to me was pretty much on target. He wrote, "It's likely that I'll get about halfway through describing my job before the judge dismisses me. I write about how to get away with drug dealing, bank robbery, and... Thank you," he predicts the judge will say. "We'll find somebody else." Here's Roger Hobbs. Hello, and welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. This is Nancy Clare, and today's special guest is Roger Hobbs, the author of the much-nominated Ghost Man. And my first question is it one word or two? The title.
Can you repeat that question?
Is the name of your novel, is it one word or two?
Yes. I've never received that question before. It's one word. It's one word. Ghost Man.
Ah, I see.
All of my graphic designers at all of my publishers said that for whatever reason, seven letters is really difficult. My American publisher, at very least, put ghost and man on separate lines and center adjusted them, which led a lot of people to believe that the name of the book is two words, Ghost Man. My British publisher right adjusted the words, and it's much more clear that it's supposed to be one word.
I see that my copy, which is I have an ARC from last, an advanced reader's copy from last year, and it is stacked and centered. And it's something, it's something I've always wanted to, although it's referred to in the jacket cover copy as one word. I was always curious about that. And this is your first novel, and not only is it your first novel, but you are, I think by any definition, a young writer.
Thank you.
You were how old when Ghost Man was published?
23.
You were 23. Did you write it when you were in college, or did you write it when you left college?
I wrote it when I was in college. I wrote the first draft between my sophomore and junior years at Reed. I then wrote a second draft after I graduated.
And this is a question I've asked a number of younger writers that I've spoken to. What makes some, because it's such an old school medium, writing a book.
Yeah.
It's not a graphic story, and it's not a game. You know, it's not writing the script for a game. You wrote a book.
Yes.
So what made you want to go in that direction, in that
direction? Writing a novel was the only art that I could do with little or no training as a kid with no access to supplies or capital. I didn't need actors. I didn't need an expensive camera. All I needed was a pen and paper, and pen and paper are cheap, especially when you're, you know, when you're 13 years old. That's when I started writing them. Was 13. I picked it because it was something that I could do at a professional level right out the bat, or at least I could aspire to do it at a professional level without having to pay a lot of money or go through a lot of gatekeepers.
And And you were successful, which makes sort of the that part of the story a little bit unconventional. Many people write for years and years and years and years. They write many, many books, and they have to wait. If they are ever published, they have to wait a lot longer. And so you pulled...
They say every writer goes through 7 years of rejection. And, you know, I went through 7 years of rejection. I just got started on those 7 years really early. I went through 10 years of rejection. I just managed to cram those years into a time of my life when I was also studying, when I knew where my next meal was going to come from, which is a virtue that a lot of writers, a privilege that a lot of writers don't have.
Well, and it's also, there's a certain economy of motion in doing that too. You know, it's sort of like I'm going to get this part of my, the rejection phase of my career just under my belt while I'm still living at home and there. But Ghostman...
That was very much a conscious decision on my part, that I knew very early on that I had only a limited number of years where I didn't have to worry about making rent, where I didn't have to compromise based on money. I tried to make the most of them. I knew very early on, I was blessed with knowing as a kid what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to take full advantage of that.
And Ghostman is a terrific, I mean, the result is certainly worth everything that you felt about it. I mean, this is Jack, for want, mm-hmm. because we don't know his real name.
Yeah.
Is a fascinating character, and actually a little bit fascinating to me, because I'm noticing recently, when I say recently, I mean for my, you know, within the last 5-6 years, that fixers have become protagonists in books.
Yeah.
Protagonists in the Mike Lawson series, and of course there's Ray Donovan on Showtime. Mm-hmm. And so one of my questions I'd like to ask is why did you make Jack a fixer as opposed to a spy or an FBI agent? Or
there used to be a certain metonymy between law enforcement agents and spies and being good people. In fiction, you could make your character despicable in almost every sense. But if you made them a spy who really worked for his country, or if you made him a law enforcement agent who really believed that he was trying to cut through crime, your audience would believe that that person was fundamentally good. And I don't think that trick works anymore. In the post 9/11 era, I think we've become more suspicious of people who do bad things in the name of justice or in the name of their country. And instead, we've become more interested in pragmatic heroes, people who do good or bad things because it's convenient. More the world that we live in now. And that's kind of what a fixer does, that they do good or bad things, not because they're good or bad, but because they're convenient.
Or it's what you do for a living, because Jack needs to make a living. And the most efficient way for him to do it is to fix situations, at least in this book. And he's sort of a fixer on steroids. I mean, there's nothing this man can't do when he's not translating Latin.
He does it for the thrill. I think there's something kind of pure about that, because the whole point of a thriller is to Well, what we sell as thriller writers, what we sell to our audience, isn't really a book or a story. What we're selling to them is an emotion, and that what we're selling is the feeling of excitement that a person gets when they read a good thriller. Jack does what he does because he wants to feel that same emotion that we want to feel when we pick up the book. It's the thing that we have in common with him. The Ghost Man is a despicable person. The things that he does is absolutely horrible. Nobody would justify. Nobody's going to claim that he's a good man. But he is, I hope, an interesting one.
Well, I was going to say there's a lot of ambiguity in Jack's character, and since you mentioned that he's not the nicest man, he's probably not someone you'd want your daughter to go out with.
Yeah, I think so.
But at the same time, he's someone that you would like to have on your good side or owe you a favor.
Yeah.
Would you say that Jack is a necessary evil?
Maybe not a necessary evil, but he is certainly an effective evil. One of the things that I wanted to make him admirable, at very least, because he's good at his job. And what he does is fight for himself and kind of his employer. So in a way, he's got that same... he's like the private detective from the noir films and books of the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Those PIs weren't in it for justice. They were in it because they were the 20th century version of knights in shining armor. Their virtue comes from being willing to do anything for their liege lord, for their employer. And Jack is like that. He's willing to do anything to get what he wants, to achieve his goals. And that's something that's really desirable, someone who can do it, can get stuff done.
There are thousands, tens of thousands of mysteries probably released every year. Your book caused an immediate buzz. And that's unusual. It's unusual for a writer of any age. It's unusual for a first novel. So I'm curious if you were surprised or were you confident in how good
it was? Oh, man. I think anybody would be surprised, especially because before I sold Ghost Man, I was sleeping on a love seat in a one bedroom, in a friend's one bedroom loft apartment in Portland, Oregon. I had like $1,000 to my name to stretch in perpetuity, what felt like in perpetuity. I had no idea. When I was writing Ghost Man, all I wanted to do was write the best possible version of like a dime store or drugstore thriller novel as I possibly could. I wanted to try my hand at that sort of writing. I felt that I could do that. I had no idea that it would do well, and I certainly had no idea that it would be so critically acclaimed. I had no idea that people who actually concern themselves with literary fiction, whatever that means, would come to enjoy it.
It's a unique book, and it's interesting because you were nominated for an Edgar, and I know that you're also nominated for an Anthony, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you between the two. And I know you've been nominated for others. It was an incredibly at least as far as the Edgars are concerned, I read all of the novels that were nominated for Best First Novel. It was an incredibly strong field.
The book that ultimately won, Red Sparrow, I very much enjoyed Red Sparrow.
I
consider everything that's happening in this part of my life a gift. I never expected to be published at this age. I never expected to very well win awards at this age, or on my first book. It's all a fun ride to me. And if I've got to lose, I'm glad that I've lost to some really, really intelligent and fun books.
I just spoke to Becky Masterman earlier this week and about Rage Against the Dying. And, you know, interestingly enough...
Oh, Rage Against the Dying was so good.
But now let's talk about the next novel, which before we started the interview, you said you had... you're now in edits.
Yes.
Is Jack back?
Yes, he is. This
when last
book
we
is...
met Jack, he was sailing off into the Atlantic, into the fog.
I don't want to say too much about that because this book... although this new book, Vanishing Games, it's called.
Pardon me, what's it called?
The name of the book is Vanishing Games.
Oh, Vanishing Games.
It stands perfectly well on its own, but it also calls back to the previous novel. I don't want to say too much about the plot, because there's not much I can say without giving something away.
Mm-hmm.
But I can say that it's set in Macau, in China. It was really great fun to research, because I got to learn about a whole new underworld. I know a lot about how crime is done in the United States, but it was total shock to the system to learn how crime is done in southern China.
And that brings up an interesting point. You know, I've certainly in this podcast series and through my career speaking to writers, I've talked a lot about place and cultivating a sense of place and the writers that write about, you know, what they know. Robert Kraes writes about Los Angeles. T. Jefferson Parker writes about Orange County. Julia Keller writes about West Virginia. And then there's...
And nobody knows Los Angeles better than Robert Kraes.
No.
He is one of my favorite writers, in part because of that. He knows that city better than anybody. Better than anybody.
He's just a damn good writer. And that's the understatement of the day. But you went to Atlantic City, and not the Atlantic City of in Ghostman. You went to Atlantic City, and not the Atlantic City of the brochures. Although in recent news stories, we're finding out that Atlantic City doesn't exist either. But the Atlantic City off the boardwalk. The less than the sleazy side of town.
Yeah.
And I'm curious why you chose that. I mean, I have a theory, but I'd like to hear what the real reason is.
In Ghostman, I changed a lot of things about Atlantic City. I wanted to make sure that I captured the characterizing flavor of Atlantic City. I wanted it to feel very Atlantic City-y, but without having to be too bound by the constraints of actual time or space. I definitely didn't want to write a book about robbing an actual Atlantic City casino, so I made a whole fictional casino chain and a whole fictional history of Atlantic City's rejuvenation. I wanted to write about the outskirts of Atlantic City, because those are the parts that really I found most haunting. That there's a long drive out from Philadelphia, where I grew up, to Atlantic City. A certain portion of that drive, you drive through the salt marshes, and it's there's buildings, whole buildings from Atlantic City's heyday that are just sinking into these marshes. You can see the city rot all around you. It's constantly rotting. Not to mention that a lot of the city at the time of the writing was abandoned. I wrote this book right during the peak of the Great Recession, where a lot of the physical buildings were foreclosed upon, were just sitting there unoccupied, literally rotting in front of you. The juxtaposition of the incredible, gaudy wealth on the boardwalk with the exceptional poverty on the outskirts, I thought was entrancing. That there are criminals on both sides, and the best ones are the types who can sell product to the tourists on the boardwalk, and also live among the poor and the desperate on the outskirts.
Well, and it struck me that Atlantic City is sort of the perfect foil for someone who has to recreate themselves. You are what you appear to be in a place.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say that about Las Vegas as well, but
That's actually why I picked Jack is from Las Vegas. If you buy the ebook comes with a little passage at the end called The Autobiography of the Ghost Man. It's this little 20-page autobiography where Jack tells you his life story. Jack is an orphan from Las Vegas. And I picked Las Vegas because no one is really from Las Vegas. Everybody, it's a city built in a desert, built on a lie. It's built on something that it really isn't, which is exactly what the Ghost Man is. It's a facade.
All appearance and no substance. Although I think that Jack has substance. We don't know how
he does.
Good it is, but I mean, how honorable, I think, is a better word. But
I want that to be sort of the mystery of the series, that over time, over reading hopefully several Ghost Man books, you'll eventually get to know who Jack is underneath it all. You'll get a better sense, slowly begin to get a better sense of who he is when he's not pretending to be someone else.
I always like to end the interviews with a question about because I live in Los Angeles, is there any interest from Hollywood in Ghost Man? And I would expect that would be a tricky thing to approach.
There's a ton of interest in Ghost Man. Before Ghost Man came out, Warner Brothers optioned Ghost Man for 7 figures. Right now, I'm working closely with a producer, and we're trying to actually see if anything comes of it. The thing about Hollywood is that there's so much smoke and mirrors. So I won't actually believe that there's going to be a movie until I'm holding the special edition DVD in my hand. But, you know, I can hope. I've worked with Hollywood before. I optioned my first film when I was 20 years old. And I wrote a screenplay on spec then as well that sold, but I mean, it didn't go anywhere. So I've had some dealings with Hollywood, but I've never actually seen my name on a screen. Seeing anything that I've written up on a screen, and I feel that's something that I want to do at some point in my life. I definitely don't want to write my own the screenplay for Ghost Man. Warner Brothers actually really wanted me to write the screenplay for Ghost Man, but I turned that down. I definitely want to work in the film and television medium. I've worked before in film and television, and I like telling stories visually. I definitely don't want to tell the same story over again in a different medium. I want to keep moving forward. I want to write something new every time.
Thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate it. I know you're busy. You had jury duty.
They asked me, as they always do, what do you do? And I said, I am a writer who specializes in writing about crime, criminals, and how to get away with committing crimes. I knew pretty much immediately that they didn't want me there.
I could see the defense attorney being tempted, but the prosecutor maybe not so much.
I think they both thought I was on the other person's side because a lot of mystery writers tend conservative. It's a very conservative job. But you write about justice all day, every day. I write about the flip side of that equation, people who evade justice. So there are a lot of different ways, that they could have seen me, both negative.
Well, Roger Hobbs, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And, I wish you a lot of luck in your upcoming, awards, and
thank you so much.
And certainly with Vanishing Games, and hopefully we'll get a chance to chat again.
Definitely.
Anyway, this is Nancy Clare. This is Speaking of Mysteries. Thank you again for listening.
We have some great interviews coming up in the next few weeks. David Rosenfeld talks about his latest Andy Carpenter mystery. The multitasking Laura Caldwell discusses her latest book, The Dog Park, her Izzy McNeil series of mysteries, her work as the director of Life After Innocence, and a new project that she is undertaking with Speaking of Mysteries co-creator Les Klinger. Also scheduled is Nick Harkaway, who will talk about his third novel, a literary thriller, Tiger Man. Please like Speaking of Mysteries on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And thank you again for listening.